This is North Shore Today for Wednesday, March 2nd. Hi, everyone. I'm Bill Newell along with Rick Moore. Well, this is Wednesday after Super Tuesday, and we'll check on some of the election results in just a moment here. But we've got some rain in our forecast for the early part of the day today, then clearing and cooling off here for a few days. So, Rick, I don't know where we begin. We've got we got some sports to talk about a little bit later on. We also have Kate Fox joining us from Destination Salem. You had a chance to talk with her this week, so we'll play that interview. But I guess let's get to let's single out a good news story for you and me from last night. We were at the Beverly basketball game against Wakefield. We ran into a technical problem. I don't know how much details we have to go into it, but I'll let you go into the details. But we had a power problem with our laptop, basically, and the device that goes into it, the power cord, and whatever that is, a transformer. What would that be, a transformer? I don't know what that is.
I think it is, yeah, you're right. I didn't realize that.
I think it is some kind of a transformer, taking AC down to DC and putting it into the computer, but that malfunctioned. So all of a sudden, our power ran out, and we were probably not going to be able to do the second half of that basketball game last night, which went into overtime, which would have been awful for the folks out there. But what happened, Rick?
Well, I tell you, it was strange in that I could not figure out why that cord wasn't supplying power to the computer, because it was getting it from the wall. And it's just, the thing was, I think you're right, the transformer just died. And lo and behold, Robert Doakes, who's with Beverly Cable Access TV, and I've seen him at many football games out there freezing. The guy comes in at halftime to try to get some warmth up in the press box. But Robert was there, and he saw that we were having trouble. He saw out of the corner of his eye during his first half coverage. And so at the half, he came up to me, and he said, "The guy's having some trouble. Can I help?" Which, you know, again, it was out of the blue. And I said, "Well, no, I don't think so. We have a pretty old laptop here." Well, he looked at it, and he said, "You know what? I may have some help for you." He went out to the truck. He came back in, took him a couple of tries, which was pretty cool, because the first one didn't work, and he went way back out to the truck again. And the second time, he had a cord that fit our computer. And as you say, lo and behold, we were on the air for the second half. So I really appreciate his help. He didn't have to do that. He took the time and effort to come see what was wrong and to give us a hand. So that was really very special. He did a great job. And from what I understand, does a great job over at Beverly Cable as well. So we thank, once again, we thank Robert Doak for his help.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, as you're explaining that, Rick, I'm thinking that, yeah, those are the kinds of people that you want in your organization. So, a shout out to him, Robert, and thank you for that. And I know we got some response back from folks when we went out and went back on the Twitter and stuff. So thank you very much for all that. And
I should point out, he lent us the cable. He didn't give it to us, so the company knows that. He got it back, and I'll be ordering a new one today, probably from Amazon.
Oh, no. He's great, but he's not that great. No, his to give
no,
away.
He is. That's right, but it was great, you know, and to get that second half on, I mean, we saw a spectacular game.
All right, Rick, it was Super Tuesday yesterday, and a salute and a congratulations going out to Thomas Walsh of Peabody. He won that special election in the, I think it's the 12th district, unofficially here with 7,138 votes, and Stephanie Peach was number two with 4,644. The Republican, so a strong victory for Walsh in Tuesday's special election, and that was the actual special election. They had the primary earlier, so he is back. He is the state rep out of Peabody now. Whenever he gets sworn in,
Let me ask you now. Have to let the dog out here, so I hope you don't lose my signal. But was that the governor came to Peabody? I saw, or something like that. There was a state. State backing, and then the local officials were backing someone else. So which was Tom Walsh, was he backed by the governor or by the locals?
I'm guessing he was backed by the locals. That he's the Democrat, and Peach, I think the governor may have appeared for Stephanie Peach. I'm not quite sure if I saw that story or not, but she's the Republican.
And do you have the numbers again? Do you have both numbers?
Yeah, it was 7,138 for Walsh and 4,644 for Peach. So
Walsh, that sounds like a pretty big turnout.
Yeah, so I guess so. Yeah, 91% of the precincts. That was with the precincts reporting. Oh, no, this is something different. Excuse me. So never mind. I'm reading something else here. But, yeah, so it's that's just the local election. So I assume that that's pretty well complete. I do have some stats here. I got to move my laptop here. But I think we all know that Donald Trump won Massachusetts with 49% of the vote. I suppose what was interesting is that John Kasich came in number two with an 18%, Marco Rubio 3%, then Cruz, Carson, and Jeb Bush got 1.1%, while Hillary Clinton scored a 50.3% victory and Bernie Sanders 48.5%. As it turned out, Sanders did win four states. Cruz won three, I believe. He won Texas, Oklahoma, and late last night he won Alaska. And Rubio won the Minnesota caucuses. That was his only win. So, you know, everyone is going to be making the case to move on. And I know that Donald Trump held kind of a different event last night. Instead of a rally like most candidates hold after their primary wins, he held more of a press conference slash rally. I was working on the computer, but I was listening to it. And calling for unifying the Republican Party. So I think saying the things that you'd expect them or that a candidate should be saying at this particular point. So a big night for Clinton and Trump last night on the Democratic and Republican race.
Yeah, I don't really have any comment. It's just we'll see where it goes. It's sort of looks like the handwriting's on the wall. I don't know how many delegates each has, but I think the trend would seem to be that eventually it will be Trump versus Clinton.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. So I guess I don't know whether that's good, bad, or whatever, but eventually that would looks to be the choice. Let's see. And some other news stories around the area. I think we had there's a story in the item that says that single-family home sales in Lynn increased in January. Now, that contradicts some of the other, I think, state or national data where home sales were way down in January. January home sales inched up from 39 to 34 for the same month a year ago. Median prices saw a 4% increase in home sales. That's just some Lynn real estate data. And the thing is, I was reading hearing a piece yesterday on the radio. Home sales or prices are up. Credit is still down, but there are less and less houses on the market right now than there were, say, a year ago at this time.
Well, you know, in Gloucester, Bill, or Cape Inn, I should say, at the Times, not a lot of big stories, thank goodness, I suppose. Just one headline that the Backshore Home Foes are looking for funds on, what's the name of that, GoFundMe? There's a coalition of people in Gloucester who want to prevent a developer from building homes on the rocks out on the back shore. And they're looking for $50,000 that they can raise for legal funds. And I'm thinking, boy, have times changed. This is really weird. So now they've got a public a website looking for funds to build a legal fund so that they can oppose the owner of a land who wants to build property, who wants to build on his own property. So just kind of strange, I think. They're looking for $50,000, and on the GoFundMe page, they have $2,630. So that's it. That's the big news. And I guess apparently the Times went to bed pretty early last night, the Gloucester Times. And so the other headline they had is that there apparently was a big turnout on Cape Ann for the primary. So we'll have to wait for tomorrow to get those numbers.
Right. I think that there was. So that's that's energized. And I guess the one thing on the primary was, in watching the coverage last night, is the energy at this point, at this time, is on the Republican side as their numbers are increased. In other words, I'm trying to think what it was. One of the elections were, now I shouldn't have brought this up because I can't remember exactly which one it was, but could have been Virginia, but the so Trump wins Virginia, Rubio wins, comes in second, then Cruz must have been third in Virginia. But what one of the states was is that even the one and two people both got more votes than the winner of that state the previous time had received. So and not combined. So you know so that's so there's a little more energy. But I watched the you know, the Virginia is an interesting state because their political scientist commentator extraordinaire, I guess, Larry Sabatil from the University of Virginia in Charlottesville was saying that, hey, Virginia's kind of a microcosm of the United States. They've been a bellwether the last couple of presidential elections. But yet, in Virginia, Donald Trump peaked out at about 34%. He might have got 34.8, 34.7. But let's say he's 35 or under percent. Marco Rubio got about 32%, I believe it was. Just 3 points, a little less than 3 points difference. But that in that state, and that's a state that has a lot of military, it has a lot of variety, it has a mix of people. But and the Republican side, I think, can be pretty conservative. But that had Trump under the 35% cap, which is kind of interesting. Other places he was getting in the 40s, and as we noted earlier, got 49% of the vote in Massachusetts.
Well, I don't know what to say, except I'm going to keep watching. It's and I just wonder if there might be an open convention on both sides. That would be kind of interesting this summer.
Well, you know, here's my take on this, and I haven't really heard people explain this, but my take on this is that there's more likely to be a convention fight on the Democratic side than on the Republican side because of the emails and the legal issues that Hillary Clinton has. And my take is that if the hammer were to come down on Hillary with the legal issues now, then Bernie Sanders for sure would be the nominee because he's already in place. He's got operations in every single state, and they'd have to do the primary process, which the American voters in those states would go to Bernie. However, if they wait and the hammer drops on Hillary on the legal issues, come let's say after the primary process, then all these delegates are free to choose, say, somebody else like a Joe Biden who walks into the race. Because if she's not in the race, I would imagine they would have a chance to either vote for Hillary or vote for somebody else. So, anyways, that's and then the Republican side. It looks to me like it's going to be very hard to stop Donald Trump. So, anyways, that's what we've got there. And let's check in. We've got Kate Fox from Destination Salem coming up with us here on MSO News Sports, and then we'll. Check in with some sports news as well. Got a lot of sports news to share with you as well on this Wednesday.
All right, with Kate Fox at Destination Salem, and Kate, February blown by. How did the you had a couple of events in February, and one was the Chocolate Festival, which I wanted to come to but couldn't. How'd that go?
It went very well. It was very successful. We had over 24 ice sculptures installed around Salem.
With the weather, you had ice sculptures?
And it was the one weekend where it was cold enough for ice sculptures. The Turner's ice sculpture actually lasted for a solid week and was beautiful, but they illuminated them for the first time this year. So Saturday night of the festival, a professional and local light company came out and put LED lights on all of the sculptures, they were really beautiful.
Excellent.
So first weekend in February, mark your calendars to come back next year.
I'll have to do that. All right, now, I saw as I was coming into Salem today, there's still a pennant over the square that talks about a beer festival?
Oh, there is. There's a, I think it was last week, though. I think that it already happened. There was an event, a beer festival to benefit Salem firefighters at Tavern in the Square. I'm pretty sure it happened the end of February. Separate from Destination Salem. Always something going on, and all of these events can be found on our calendar at salem.org.
Okay. That's what we're here for. You went away last month or the month before somewhere. Was it someplace? Where'd you go? In Arizona or the Congo? I don't know. Where'd you go? There was some kind of deal. What was that?
It was just like Arizona or the Congo. I was in Kentucky.
Listen up.
Louisville, Kentucky at the American Bus Association Marketplace, and that's where we go to market Salem as a destination for group tour.
What does that mean? Tell me what that means. And that is so you meet with other people and they take it back to their parts of the country?
Yep. I had meetings with 54 tour operators and travel agents who go back and sell to their clients, be they seniors, students, all ages, who are coming into Salem as group tours. So when you see all the buses come into the region, they're not just doing Salem. They're coming from all over the place, and they come in and do the history, the sites, the attractions, have a meal, go shopping. They head up to Gloucester during the season. They're going out whale watching. They're going to the different attractions. They do the shopping in Bearskin Neck and Rockport. And then they head up, either head north or they head west and go to Lexington and Concord and have a great itinerary in Massachusetts.
Wow, you could work for the state with that promo. My goodness, you included everybody. But buses come from other states. Is that the idea?
Absolutely. They come. One of our largest drive markets is Ohio, and then the Mid-Atlantic,
really?
Pennsylvania. So we get a lot of groups who come up. You look at the cruise industry and all the cruise passengers we have that come up, either the ships coming into Salem now or the many, many ships that come into Boston. And then we have shore excursions that come up on buses. And they're coming from all over the place.
That's cool.
Texas. We have a big draw from Texas, California. People all over the world love Salem, love New England.
Oh, well, of course, what's not to love? All right, so we've got, we talked about on the video, you've got the film festival starting this week, and that's a little bit different take. It's not your theatrical movies.
No, it's documentary, and documentarians from all over the world. The selection committee does an amazing job of bringing movies in that are going to present different interpretations on different cultures everywhere. And they have great partners in the Peabody Essex Museum and all the different local sponsors who are both hosting movies, their venues, and then they're also hosting the talkbacks with the directors after the movies. This year, we also have a mini film fest happening simultaneously at the National Park, the Visitor Center. On Liberty Street is doing a little film festival with just films about national parks. So more documentaries, but all about the national parks across the country, and that is in acknowledgement of the centennial of the national parks in America.
My head is spinning here. Oh, my goodness. Okay, and what's coming up in the near term as we approach spring?
There's so much going on in Salem, so I'm going to tell you have to go to salem.org. But immediately we have the Film Fest. After that, we have Restaurant Week, which starts March 13th to 17th, and then 20th to 24th. And then the Salem Award for Human Rights and Social Justice is given on March 20th, and that's going to a woman from Swampscott named Ann Driscoll, who has done a lot on social rights, human rights issues, Ann Driscoll. And that information, all of it's on salem.org. And then we go into spring. We have a festival every month, so poetry festival, arts festival, there's always something.
All right. We'll link to that, obviously, on our post. Okay, now, this is coming from left field, out of the blue. We didn't talk about this in our pregame, so feel free to say go away. I was thinking as I was looking at the program, the guide for this year, that there are so many events in Salem that are promoted, they're in the calendar and so on, but there are also hidden gems. There are uncut diamonds, as it were. And what I'm going to do, if it's okay with you, is I'm going to ask you, and you're promoting everything, I understand that, but I want to ask you, maybe each time we get together, to think of one place that maybe hasn't had a lot of notoriety, but that is really good to visit, good to know about. And it could be anything. It could be a bus stop, a school, a restaurant, whatever it might be, just a scenic vista, because there's so much to see on the North Shore, but particularly in Salem. So can we do that, do you think?
Absolutely. You want me to start now?
I do. That was the whole idea. So that's why I talk so long, to give you let it process.
No, there are a lot of hidden gems, or just gems that certain people might love. Since it's March, some places are closed during the winter. Not all of them. That's not a reason to stay away. But the Phillips House on Chestnut Street is open weekends. It's part of historic New England, and it is one of my favorite sites in Salem because it interprets the Phillips family, their life, and their servants' lives in the house from the time the Phillips moved in 1912. It's our little Downton Abbey. It's the only house on, and it's not little, but the only house on Chestnut Street that's open to the public, and they do a beautiful job of interpreting the history from a social perspective.
Were they of English extraction? Were they,
no. And I don't want to get too deep into it because I don't know all the details, but the Phillips family is really, really interesting in several generations.
Okay.
So there's and they collected amazing souvenirs from around the world. There's a lot of Polynesian connections. It's a McIntyre house, so you have the Samuel McIntyre, and the house was half of the house was part of the original Oak Hill estate over where North Shore Mall is now. So several rooms are in the new wing of the MFA. And several rooms are here, and the rest of the house was built around it. So there's a great divorce story. There's, part of the social history is why the house was divided in two and split between the MFA and Chestnut Street.
Oh.
So,
That's what I'm talking about. All right, so I want to do that. The Phillips House. Okay, finally, I was thumbing through the guide, and we don't have to talk specifically. We can, but again, this guide is amazing. It's out or will be out?
It is out. It's available. You can request it. We'll send it to you for free on salem.org. And if you're in Salem, you'll find it at the visitor center, hotels, attractions, all over the place.
And one of the things that caught my eye, which just kind of really amazed me, and now I can't, it's called a past life regression specialist, and there's actually a certification guided by a certified past life regression therapist. So if it's in Salem, if it's something you want, you can find it in Salem.
Absolutely. And it's, you know, I have not personally done a past life regression, but I like to say you can look back, you can go get a psychic reading and look forward. You have a lot of opportunities in Salem.
And you can enjoy the present.
Absolutely.
There you go. All right. That's Kate Fox, Destination Salem.
It is time to check sports on North Shore today. And last night we had an overtime basketball game. We did a Wakefield game earlier this year when they played Melrose at Wakefield, their second matchup of the year against their rivalry opponent, Melrose, and they went into overtime. Corey Embriano hit a huge three-point shot in that game to win it. And then last night he hits another three with time running out. I guess there were like 4 seconds left on the clock when he hits the three to give Wakefield the one-point lead in the game, and so he does it again. We have a complete post up on that game and a video with Corey Embriano from Wakefield High School, and you know, you never know. I guess he's the team's best three-point shooter, but what a thrilling game it was. A real heartbreaker for Beverly High School. You know, Beverly, it looked like they had the game locked up a couple of times, but like I saw the Wakefield team come back on Melrose earlier this year a number of times, seemingly to be dead and gone in the game of several times, one to send it into overtime, then dropping way behind, I believe, in overtime, and then to only to come back to win. You know, they're like the cardiac kids, I guess. So anyways, that's what we had last night in our MSO News Sports broadcast game.
We saw both football coaches too, Bill, Beverly and Wakefield football coaches, after the game. And they were commenting on the behavior of the student bodies. And we mentioned several times last night how cool that was. Great turnout for both schools. Both schools cheering their teams on with a lot of exuberance, enthusiasm, and really very good behavior.
Exactly. So a little shout out and a little salute to the two ADs as well, James Coffey and Brendan Kent, from Beverly and Wakefield, respectively. And I know Brendan was right down there the whole night with the what Beverly does, which it was so great that they did this. They had the end zone seats on each end, and I think during the regular season they only have them at one end. Crowds are a little bit smaller, but they had the end seats at the end line, where, you know, if you follow college basketball, that's where a lot of the schools put their crazy student fan base or whatever. And so they did it in Beverly, and it worked out great. They you know, Wakefield came. They had huge numbers of Wakefield kids, all dressed in bright red. Beverly, the same side across the way. They had the orange, and they were at one end. And they were loud. They were vocal. But as you said, Rick, just well-behaved. So, you know, and both football coaches made note of that. Steve Cummins from Wakefield and Dan Bauer, the former football coach at Beverly High School, as he'll be leaving and stepping down for that as he becomes the principal at Marblehead High School come next school year. So, yeah, it was great to see both those guys.
All right, hockey was an interesting night last night. I want to start with the condolences first. Linfield eliminated by a goal. We hate to see Coach Gardner's team leave, but a great season for them, and they lost by a goal to Boston Latin, I believe it was.
Yeah.
Winthrop won last night, but Peabody lost in a heartbreaker. Who'd they play, Bill? It was Maskinomet.
Oh, yeah, Peabody Masco, yeah.
Yeah, so Masco wins. Congratulations to Masco, but a tough loss for Coach Leonard and the kids, and we hope to talk with Coach Leonard in the next week or so. And Marblehead, I guess, the game of the night, 4-3, they beat Haverhill. Two overtimes, it still wasn't decided. And then I believe, if I read the tweets by Phil Stacey correctly, they went to six rounds of the shootout before Danny Jashenko scored and won. So Jashenko score, Janesco, I'll get it right here in a second. Danny Janesco, number 24 for the headers, scores, and so Marblehead moves on. Now Gloucester will be playing Tewksbury Next, I believe Tewksbury won 6-0 over Revere, or 4-0, something like that. And I believe that game will be on Friday night. We don't know where, so we'll see if we're going to be able to broadcast that game. But we'll have more coverage coming up.
And on boys basketball, a couple of notes. We do have a post up with some of these scores up there, but Lynn Clasco fell in the tournament last night to Arlington, while St. John's Prep defeated Billerica in the opening round by a comfortable score. And what did I miss here? We talked about the Wakefield-Beverly game. Essex Tech girls lost last night. And tonight we have Melrose playing at Danvers, and that is a 7:30 tip-off from Danvers High School tonight in boys basketball. So we'll keep our fingers crossed for some power. And it's funny, Rick. We talked about the whole power issue with our broadcast last night, and I'm looking at that plug that in the wall that right next to us there, and you were saying at the time, there's no power coming out of this. And I'm thinking, well, that James Coffey, what's up with this guy? You know, but what's up with Beverly not having power up here for us? You know, geez, you know, and obviously they did, you know, but that was it's was funny. But anyways, so I guess that'll do it for us. So we've got the big basketball game tonight, and then we got to recalibrate today and take a look and see where everyone's playing, where it all shakes out. It's kind of like a sifter where you have to put the sand back in and sift it back out and see where it all falls and see what it looks like here coming up for the next few days. That is Rick Moore. I'm Bill Newell. This is North Shore Today, and this is MSONewsSports.com.